3. The car zipped along, slung under one of the monorails that ran amongst the superconducting coils beneath the ceiling of the habitat. Gunnar Hofhorn looked down through the angled windows of the car at the clouded framescape below. God's whole habitat, it was much too small to be called an orbital, according to the culture's definitive nomenclature, plus it was enclosed, was, at nearly 1,000 years old, one of the front's older outposts in a region of space most civilizations had long since agreed to call the Fernblade. The small world was in the shape of a hollow ring, a tube 10 kilometers in diameter and 2,200 long, which had been joined into a circle. The superconducting coils and EM waveguides formed the inner rim of the enormous wheel. The tiny, rapidly spinning black hole, which provided the structure's power, sat where the wheel's hub would have been. The circular sectioned living space was like a highly pressurized tire bulging from the inner rim. And where its tread would have been hung the gantries and docks, where the ships of the front and a dozen other species came and went. The whole lot was in a slow, distant orbit, about an otherwise satellite-less brown dwarf mass, just too small to be a proper star, but which had long had the honour of being in exactly the right place to further the continuing expansion and consolidation of the front sphere of influence. The monorail car rushed towards a huge wall spread entirely across the view ahead. The rails disappeared into a small circular door, which opened like a sphincter as the car approached, then closed again behind it. It was dim in the car for a while as it traversed a short tunnel. Then another door ahead of it dilated, and it shot out into a huge open mist-filled space, where the view just disappeared amongst clouds and haze. The interior of God's whole habitat was sectioned off into about 40 individually isolable compartments, most of them crisscrossed by a webwork of frames, girders, and tubular members, partly to provide additional strength for the structure, but partly because these created a multitude of places for the front to anchor the nest spaces that were the basic cellular building block of their architecture. There were more open compartments every few sections along the habitat, filled with little more than layers of cloud, a few floating nest space bundles, and a selection of flora and fauna. These were the sections which more closely mirrored conditions on the sort of mainly methane-atmosphered planets and moons the Affront preferred. And it was in these the Affront indulged their greatest passion by going hunting. It was one of these immense game reserves that the car was now crossing. Gunnar Hofhorn looked downwards again, but he couldn't see a hunt in progress. As much as a fifth of the whole habitat was devoted to hunting space, and even that represented a huge concession to practicality by the Affront. They'd probably have preferred the proportions to be about half and half hunting space and everything else, and even then have thought they were being highly responsible and self-sacrificing. Gunnar Hofhorn found himself wondering again about the trade-off between skill honing and distraction that took place in the development of any species likely to end up as one of those in play in the great galactic civilization game. The culture's standard assessment held that the Affront spent far too much time hunting, and not nearly enough time getting on with the business of being a responsible space-faring species. Though, of course, the culture was sophisticated enough to know that this was just its admittedly subjective way of looking at things. And besides, the more time the Affront spent dallying in their hunting parks and regaling each other with hunting tales in their carousing halls, the less they had for rampaging across their bit of the galaxy, being horrible to people. But if the affront didn't love hunting as much as they did, would they still be the affront? Hunting, especially the highly cooperative form of hunting in three dimensions, which the affront had evolved, required and encouraged intelligence. And it was generally, though not exclusively, intelligence that took a species into space. The required mix of common sense, inventiveness, compassion, and aggression required was different for each. Perhaps if you tried to make the affront just a little less enraptured by hunting, you would only be able to do so by making them much less intelligent and inquisitive. It was like play. It was fun at the time, when you were a child. But it was also training for when you became an adult. Fun was serious. Still no sign of a hunt in progress, or even of any herds of prey animals, just a few filmy mats and hanging verticals of floating plant life. Doubtless some of the smaller animals, which a few species of the prey creatures themselves predated, would be hanging, munching away on the membranes and gas sacs of the flora. But they were invisible from this distance, with the haze preventing closer inspection. Gunnar Hofoen sat back. There was no seat to sit back on, because the monorail car wasn't built for humans, but the gel-filled suit was imitating the effects of a seat. He wore his usual gilet and holster. At his feet was his gel-filled holdall. He looked at it, then prodded it with a foot. It didn't look much to be taking on a round trip of 6,000 light-years. "Bastards," the module said inside his head. "What?" he asked it. "They seem to enjoy leaving everything to the last moment," the module said, sounding annoyed. "You know, we only just finished negotiating for the hire of the ships. I mean, you're due to leave in about 10 minutes. How late can these maniacs leave things?" "Ships, plural," he asked. "Ships, plural," the module said. "They insist we hire 3 of their ridiculous tubs, any one of which could easily accommodate me, I might add. That's another point at issue. But 3, can you believe? That's practically a fleet by their standards." "Must need the money. Gunnar Hofoen, I know you think it amusing to be the cause of the transfer of funds to the affront. But might I point out to you that where it's not to all intents and purposes irrelevant, money is power, money is influence, money is effects."
"Money is effects," Gunnar Hofoen mused. "That one of your own, Scapella Franquai.
The point is that every time we donate the affront extra means of exchange, we effectively become part of their expansionist drive. It's not moral."
"Shit. We gave them orbital building technology. How does that compare with a few gambling debts?"
"That was different. We only gave them that so they'd stop taking over so many planets, and because they didn't trust the orbitals we made for them. And I'm not talking about your gambling debts, however outrageous, or your bizarre habit of bidding up the price of bribes. I'm talking about the cost of hiring 3 affronter Nova-class battle cruisers and their crews for 2 months.
Gunnar Hofoen almost laughed out loud.
"SC isn't putting that on your tab, is it?" "Of course not. I was thinking of the wider picture." "What the fuck am I supposed to do?" he protested. "This is the fastest way of getting me where SC wants me to be. Not my fault." "You could have said no, could have. And you'd have spent the next year or so biting my ear about not doing my duty to the culture when I was asked. Your only motive, I'm sure, Scapella Franqui said sniffily as the monorail car slowed. The module went offline with an ostentatious click. Prick, Gunnar Hofoen thought, unheard. The monorail car passed through another couple of habitat section walls, exiting into a crowded-looking industrial section where the keel skeletons of newly begun apprenticeships rose out of the haze like oddly inappropriate collections of spines and ribs, ornate elaborations within the greater framework of buttresses and columns supporting the habitat itself. The monorail car continued to slow, until it drew to a stop within a web tube attached to one of the structural members. The car started to drop, almost in freefall. The car vibrated. In fact, it was rattling. Gunnar Hofoen had grown up on a culture orbital, where only sporting vehicles and things you built yourself for a laugh ever vibrated. Normal transport systems rarely ever even made a noise, unless it was to ask which floor you wanted or whether you'd like the onboard scent changed. The monorail car flashed through a floor and into another gigantic hangar space, where the towering shapes of half-finished craft rose like barbed pinnacles out of the mist-shrouded framework of slender girders below. The bladed hulls of the ships blurred past to one side. "Whee-hee!" said the Gelfield suit, which thought a fronter freefall was just a total hoot. "Glad you're amused," Gunnar Hofoen thought. "I hope you realized that if this thing crashes now, even I won't be able to stop you breaking most of your major bones," the suit informed him. "If you can't say something helpful, shut the fuck up," he told it. Another floor rushed up to meet the car. It plummeted through to a vast misty hall, where almost finished apprenticeships rose like jagged skyscrapers. The car came juddering and screeching to a halt near the floor of the huge space. The suit clamped around him in support, but Gunnar Hofoen could feel his insides doing uncomfortable things under the effects of the additional apparent gravity. Then the car cycled through a pair of airlocks and rumbled down a dark tunnel. It came out onto the edge of the underside of the habitats, where a succession of docks shaped like giant ribcages disappeared away along the lazy curve of the little world. There was a lot of glare, but a few bright stars shone in the darkness. About half the docks were occupied, some with apprenticeships, some with craft from a handful of other species. Dwarfing all the others were three huge dark craft, each of which looked vaguely as though it had been modelled by taking a free-fall aerial bomb from one age and welding onto it a profusion of broadswords, scimitars and daggers from an even earlier time, and then magnifying the result until each was a couple of kilometres in length. They hung cradled in docks a few kilometres off. The car swung round and headed towards them. "The good ships Sack Slicer II, Fright Spear, and Kiss the Blade," the suit announced, as the car slowed again and the bulbous black bulks of the craft blotted out the stars. "Charmed, I'm sure," thought Gunnar Hofoen, picking up his holdall. He studied the hulls of the three warships, looking for the signs of damage that would indicate the craft were veterans. The signs were there. A delicate tracery of curved lines, light grey on dark grey and black, spread out across the spines, blades and curtain hull of the middle ship, indicated a probably glancing blow from a plasma blast, which even Gunnar Hofoen, who found weapons boring, could recognize. Blurred grey roundels, like concentric bruises on that middle ship, the nearest vessel, were the marks of another weapon system, and sharp straight lines etched across the various surfaces of the third craft looked like the effects of yet another. Of course, the front ships were as self-repairing as any other reasonably advanced civilizations. And the marks that had been left on the vessels were just that. They would be no thicker than a coat of paint, and have negligible effect on the ship's operational capability. However, the affront thought that it was only right that their ships should, like themselves, bear the scars of honour that battle brings, and so allowed their warship's self-repair mechanisms to stop just short of perfection, the better to display the provenance of their war fleet's glorious reputations. The car stopped directly underneath a middle warcraft, in the midst of a forest of giant pipes and tubes, which disappeared into the belly of the ship. Crunches, thumps, and hisses from outside the car announced all was being made safe. A wisp of vapor burst from a seal, and the car's door swung out and up. There was a corridor beyond. An honor guard of affronters jerked to attention. Not for him, of course, but for Five-Tide and the affronter at his side, dressed in the uniform of a navy commander. Both of them were half-floating, half-walking along towards him, paddles rowing and dangling limbs pushing.
"And here's our guest!"
Five-Tide shouted.
"Gunnar Hofhauen! Allow me to present Commander Kindrama VI of both the Bladecorner tribe and the battle cruiser Kiss the Blight. So, human, ready for our little jaunt?"
"Yep," he said, and stepped out into the corridor.